Good morning. You are tuned in to Community Radio, listener-supported KGNU. I'm Maeve Conran, and coming up on this morning's magazine, as it is election day, we'll check in with the Boulder County Clerk and Recorder on what you need to know if you have yet to cast your ballot. Then we'll hear about an event to encourage teens to tell stories. The upcoming Story Slam happens at the Dairy Centre in Boulder. After that, we'll hear about an event that happens on Friday in Denver. There will be an evening of solidarity between Latinx and Irish American communities. We'll hear about the shared history of the two groups, particularly when it comes to immigration. After the comment line, it is back to the BBC for headlines, and then it's time for science. And today on How on Earth, we'll hear about the science of daredevils. At 9 o'clock, it is the wit and wisdom of Alan Watts rounding out this morning's News and Public Affairs. But first, we'll begin with the latest local headlines. A man from southern Colorado has been charged with a federal hate crime after allegedly planning to blow up a synagogue in Pueblo. Andrea Chalfin has more.
Justice Department officials say 27-year-old Richard Holzer of Pueblo planned to destroy Temple Emmanuel. According to a press release from the U.S. Attorney for the District of Colorado, Holzer allegedly met with undercover agents to talk about a plan, then visited the synagogue multiple times. The plan was supposed to be carried out early Saturday morning. That's according to the affidavit supplied by the Justice Department. In the complaint, authorities say Holzer was preparing for a, quote, racial holy war, and that his actions meet the definition of domestic terrorism. The official charge is an attempt to obstruct persons in the enjoyment of their free exercise of religious beliefs through force and the attempted use of explosives and fire. If convicted, Holzer could face up to 20 years in prison. A hearing has been set for Thursday. I'm Andrea Chalfin.
The trial of two former Boulder sheriff deputies who have been charged with manslaughter has been postponed until April. The Daily Camera reports that the trial for James O'Brien and Adam Lunn was set to begin today, but it now won't happen until spring 2020. They're accused in the death of Demetrius Shankling, who was 23 when he died while being transported to a detox centre by the two deputies. They had placed him in a confined space on his stomach. He was then found unresponsive when they arrived at the detox centre. Shankling was placed on life support, but he died 27 days later. The death was ruled a homicide. Both men remain out of custody on personal recognizance bonds. A non-profit in the Denver metro area has secured land for affordable housing. Megan Weber has that report.
The new Westminster development will feature units for buyers and renters with a mixture of uses and income levels. The nonprofit is known for its below-market prices and multifamily rentals. The Urban Land Conservancy's Senior Vice President Deborah Busto said the purchase near Westminster Station includes 5.5 acres of land and will be used for low-cost housing. She told the Denverite that the nonprofit does not have a lot of affordable housing along the transit corridor that has home ownership, and she said that's what's missing. The Urban Land Conservancy's developments are also home to community centers, clinics, and small businesses that might otherwise struggle in other neighborhoods. The new Westminster property is located between Federal and Lowell Boulevards. City officials expect major growth in that area in coming years, partly because of the transit station. The site combines two neighboring plots on West 71st Place and Lowell Boulevard. The development is not expected to emerge for some time, according to the Urban Land Conservancy. Vice President for Master Site Development, Aaron Clark, told the Denverite that she wants to better understand what has already been built in the area and what else is coming so the nonprofit can fulfill a need without duplicating what is already there. The new property is one of many in Denver, Lakewood, Commerce City, and Aurora that the Urban Land Conservancy will be focusing on in the coming days to address the region-wide need for affordable housing. For KGNU, I'm Megan Weber.
Sunny skies in the forecast for the Front Range today. Highs in the mid-50s. Similar temperatures on Wednesday, but some clouds coming in and a slight chance of some patchy fog and maybe even a little bit of snow coming in Wednesday night. On Thursday, those highs will be in the upper 40s, but we might get close to 60 degrees and into the low 60s for Friday and Saturday. It is 10 minutes past 8 o'clock. You're listening to KGNU. Well, today is election day and ballots must be returned to a voting centre by 7 p.m. this evening. It is too late to mail in your ballot, but you can drop them off at a variety of locations around the Front Range. KGNU's Megan Weber spoke with Boulder County Clerk and Recorder Molly Fitzpatrick about what you need to know on election day.
So Colorado is an all-option state, so every active registered voter receives a ballot in the mail, and what they choose to do with that ballot is really their choice. Voters can choose to drop their ballot off at a 24-hour drop box or a drive-by drop-off location. They can go vote in person, or they can mail their ballot in. At this point, it is too late to mail that ballot in, so we are encouraging voters to go to a voter service center if they need to get a replacement ballot or need to vote in person. We do have 4 voter service centers, or VSPCs, in Boulder County. We have one in Boulder, Longmont, Lafayette, and on CU's campus. And we also have drop boxes throughout the county, and for locations on both drop boxes and for voter service centers, voters and community members can go to bouldercountyvotes.org for that complete list of locations.
All ballots are due no later than 7 p.m. tonight. Fitzpatrick said her office is expecting most ballots to come in tonight if they haven't already been mailed in or cast yesterday. She said this year's election should be very similar to the one in 2017.
So as of Sunday, 53,000 people had returned their ballot, which is nearly 24% turnout. And as of Sunday in 2017, we had 50,000 people return their ballot. And again, these are county numbers, not specific to any particular city or jurisdiction. That is Boulder County. And our office does not predict turnout, but we do think that this election will be similar to another coordinated election. So in general, general election, presidential elections look similar to previous general elections, and odd year elections look similar to previous odd year elections. So we are expecting to see similar numbers to previous odd year elections, and that can range anywhere between 40 and 50%. So something along that range is what we're expecting.
Fitzpatrick said there is a clear difference in turnout between presidential election years and odd year elections, and she thinks that difference is due in large part to how aware voters are of the election before it happens.
So in a presidential year, there's typically much more attention, there's typically much more funding, and there's a lot more chatter on the news and on social media. So a lot of people are just hearing about the election from a variety of different sources. In a smaller election, there's typically less resources and money involved, and so it really does take everybody talking to their friends and neighbors to let them know that there is an election, because they are likely not hearing about it on the news, and so that's one reason why we think turnout tends to be lower in those odd years. But at the end of the day, local elections are so important, because that's where so many of these decisions are made. Mm-hmm. You are voting on people that will represent you at the local level, which oftentimes has the biggest impact on our day-to-day. It comes down to schooling and public safety and environmental issues. So we really want people to turn out for these local elections, and hopefully continue a trend of high voter participation in all elections, and especially increase it for these local elections.
Fitzpatrick said that this year, voters can expect to see city council races, local ballot measures related to open space, affordable housing, and a variety of other issues on the ballot. There is a sample ballot on the County Clerk and Recorder's website, which voters can look at to see what issues they are being asked to vote on. Fitzpatrick says Boulder and Colorado have a lot to be proud of in terms of voter turnout, and she hopes that turnout in 2019 will prove just as strong as in the past. She said she also wants to encourage voters to vote early because it helps reduce political calls and helps the office count ballots more quickly. Although it is too late to mail in your ballot, Fitzpatrick said it is not too late to register to vote. Colorado does not have a registration deadline, and you can register through and on Election Day and still get a ballot. For KGNU, I'm Megan Weber.
And you can find all of KGNU's coverage of the municipal elections. We've had city council candidate debates. We've had all kinds of stuff. It's all online at news.kgnu.org. You can find the 2 debates on the statewide ballot issues, Prop CC and Prop DD. Once again, it's at news.kgnu.org. And for voters in Boulder, you might want to check out Shay Castle's extensive reporting on the municipal elections. That's at boulderbeat.news. Well, there are a couple of events that are coming up in coming weeks for members of the community to participate in a story slam, in particular, teenagers. It's all happening at the Dairy Arts Centre in Boulder. KGNU's Ginger Perry has more.
Hi, this is Ginger Perry for KGNU. I'm here with Johanna Walker of the Boulder Story Slam. Tell our audience, in case they don't know, just what a story slam is.
A story slam is an event where the community gets together. There's a theme for the night. If you have a story related to the theme, you put your name in the hat. If your name gets picked, you come to the stage and tell the story. There's a 5-minute time limit, and then the audience votes on the best story at the end of the night.
No notes, and has to be true, right?
Exactly, yes.
And I understand you're starting a teen story slam. Tell us a little bit about that, what age and what you have in mind for it.
Yeah, well, I've been producing The Truth Be Told for the last 6.5 years with Nina Raleigh, and this is sort of a new chapter now. We're partnering with The Dairy, and so one of the things we're excited about is to produce this teen story slam. For this first one we're doing is for ages 13 to 15. And it's going to start with a workshop. There's a 4-week workshop, and then the teens will, there will be an event at the end where they get to tell their stories on stage at the Dairy.
And what age are these kids, and how'd you pick this age?
This one is 13 to 15-year-olds. I decided to split it up. Hopefully in the future we'll do one for older teens, but this is for 13 to 15-year-olds. And I just love that age group, and I think it's a time when a lot of kids lose track. They just lose track of themselves. They get a little bit lost and confused about who they are and how they fit in. And to go through the process of digging for and telling a story that is meaningful to them, can be just hugely powerful and even life-changing. And it doesn't have to be a big dramatic story. It could be a big dramatic story. A lot has happened to a kid at the age of 13, 14, 15, but also just to be able to tell the stories of, you know, benign stories of the day or funny stories. It's so powerful. We figure out who we are in the world by telling our stories. And to give kids that tool at that age can really help them change course and, you know, it can be life-changing.
So what do you think kids get out of this age group especially?
Well, I think they get, you know, part of it is the workshop. You know, they're going to tell the story at the end. Although I have told a couple of kids they don't have to tell the story. If they want to do the workshop and not tell the story, I'm not going to make anybody get up on stage. But to go through the process with a group of people, taking risks, trying stuff, being goofy, being playful, telling their stories, they build confidence. They're going to be building relationships. They're going to learn tools for making sense of their lives. I think stories serve that purpose, and to give that tool and that container to teens this age can be really powerful.
Yeah, it's a deepening experience and something that can help them figure out their own experiences by sharing it and taking a look at it from another point of view. And so when are these workshops?
The workshop starts November 11th. It's a 4-week workshop, and I think a big part of doing the workshop is I really want them to be successful at the slam and or at the event at the end. I may not actually be a competition. I'm going to see what the kids want, but I'm thinking it'll just be an event where they get to share their stories. But I want them to be successful, and I want, you know, there are the kids who just grabbing, you know, they're like, give me the mic, I'll tell a story. And then there are a lot of kids who don't have that level of confidence and who might be a little bit scared to tell a story and not even sure they have a story. So the workshop is to do a digging process to help, you know, just to get more voices to the table, more teen voices to the table.
I almost wish I had a teenager to take it. So what are the times of the workshop and where do they take place?
Yeah, they'll be at the Dairy on Mondays from 4 to 6 starting November 11th for 4 weeks. We'll take the week of Thanksgiving off, and then the final event will be on December 16th.
The Teen Story Slam.
That's right.
Is there some way that they can contact you or get more information about this?
There's a website, storyslamboulder.com. Also the Dairy website, it's on the Dairy website. And they're welcome to email me, jw@johannawalker.com. If there's anybody who's interested but can't do it right now, I'd love to be in touch for the future. So send me an email, jw@johannawalker.com.
Johanna Walker here of the Boulder Story Slam, Ginger Perry from KGNU.
Support comes from First Bite, Boulder County's Restaurant Week, taking place November 8th through the 16th. More information at firstbiteboulder.com.
Support comes from the Chinook Fund, presenting The Giving Project, a program for people passionate about social change and interested in developing new skills in fundraising, grant making, and community building. Leaders of the Chinook Fund will be at the Boulder Main Public Library's El Dorado Room on Thursday, November 14th at 5:30 p.m. More information at chinookfund.org.
This Friday evening in Denver, there will be a Latinx and Irish night of solidarity to share commonalities and find solidarity between the two communities, particularly when it comes to the history of immigration. KGNU's equity reporter, Rosanna Longo, spoke with Jim Walsh, who's an associate professor in the political science department at CU Denver and the founder of the Romero Theatre Troupe. He's the organizer of Friday's event.
An attempt to bring two very different communities and cultures together in solidarity, to work together, to talk about common goals. We'll be raising funds. Half of the funds go to El Centro Humanitario, which does really important work in the immigrant community. And the other half will go to a memorial in Leadville, Colorado, where there's a cemetery in Leadville with 1,500 or so Irish immigrants buried in unmarked graves. And so we've been raising money to memorialize them. The average age of the people buried there is 21. It's kind of a story of the tragic life of being a miner in the 19th century. So in the context of doing that work in the Irish community, and I've been involved in the immigrant community for many years here in Denver, it occurred to me that if we're going to be honoring and recognizing 19th century immigrant workers, that we ought to be honoring and recognizing 21st century immigrant workers. And so the spirit of this event is to connect that historical dots between past and present, immigrant labor of people chasing dignity and dreams and hopes for their families. There's also cultural similarities, Catholicism, kind of family-oriented, oral tradition, storytelling, organizing and resistance, facing imperialism and the loss of land. There's a lot of historical connections between the communities. The idea came to me that since I feel rooted in both communities, it just makes sense to bring them together and to celebrate that shared heritage and that shared diaspora and that shared struggle. And we're having it at El Centro because it just makes sense to educate the Irish community about the strategies being used today in the immigrant community to find dignity and work and respect. And El Centro Humanitario embodies that, the work that they do there. So that's kind of how it all, the idea came, and it spread quickly, and there's a lot of support for this event in both communities. So we're expecting a nice big crowd. We'll have music from both traditions and food, storytelling. There'll be speakers. There'll be a ofrenda, Dia de los Muertos ofrenda, that we've been invited to contribute to. So it'll be a cross-cultural altar. And Halloween originated in Ireland, so there's a shared connection there as well. But these two groups have a connection that's embodied in the story of the San Patricios during the Mexican-American War, when the U.S. militarily seized half of Mexico in the 1840s. Was the exact same time that thousands, tens of thousands of starving Irish were getting off boats from the famine, and so many of those young men ended up in Texas fighting against Mexico, and hundreds of them abandoned the U.S. military and joined the Mexican military. and fought against the U.S. And historians believe that there was a sense among those Irish soldiers that they had just left a war against England because England was taking Irish land, and now they were in a new war. But this time they were on the imperialist side taking Mexican land, and they weren't comfortable with that. So we're going to perform that story as part of the night's festivities.
Jim Walsh, the founder of the Romero Theatre Troupe, he's organising Friday's event when the Irish American and Latinx communities will come together to share food, music, stories, struggles, and to raise funds for El Centro Humanitario, as well as for an Irish migrant memorial in Leadville's Evergreen Cemetery. It's all happening this Friday, November 8th, from 6 p.m. at El Centro Humanitario. That's on California Street in Denver. Thanks to Rosanna Longo for that interview. You're listening to Community Radio KGNU. Up next, it's the Comment Line.
I very much enjoyed Mr. O'Connor's remarks, but I think it's time we admitted that the elephant in the room is that the two ways for municipalities and sometimes counties to raise the revenues that they desperately need to pay for the growth that they've already allowed are to increase sales tax. Hence, the willingness to pay huge subsidies for shopping malls. The other one is to increase the property tax base. No increase in the rates, but an increase in revenue in the short term. This has to be addressed. The anti-tax movement has been fueled by people not understanding who actually did this to them. But now they're being taken in another way, by their own resistance to getting information.
We were deceived about Proposition DD, the so-called sports betting to fund Colorado's water plan. Why? Because Proposition DD was really designed to get voters to approve sports betting. Sports betting has been illegal in most states until 2018, when the Supreme Court ruled the Professional and Amateur Sports Act unconstitutional. Then the Colorado House and Senate passed a law making sports betting in Colorado legal, and Governor Polis signed it. But because of Tabor, the voters had to approve the 10% tax on the bets. So the promoters of sports betting thought, what can we say the tax is for that will get bipartisan support and voter approval? And they came up with the underfunded Colorado Water Plan. Perfect. But not all the tax money can go for the water plan. $1.74 million has to go for sports betting enforcement, and $130,000 will go toward gambling addiction services. And we have to donate 6% of the 10% tax to off-track betting sites and others negatively affected by restrictions on who gets the profit from this multi-billion dollar industry. So after that 60% cut to the tax revenue and after the other expenses, Colorado Water gets left with very little. The purpose was never really about water. We were deceived and got a skimpy deal. Who designed this? Read the Westward Report in the September 3rd issue.
You can call us on the comment line anytime. Just call 303-447-9911. Leave a message, and we air the comment line on Tuesday mornings.
It's 8:30. You're tuned to KGNU. In the weather, we're expecting highs today in the 50s and sunny skies, mostly sunny skies today and tomorrow. Up next, we'll be going to the BBC, followed by the science show How on Earth with a look at thrill seekers, and then Alan Watts at 9 o'clock. All that here at your listener-supported radio station, KGNU.